Hi, this is Jim Montague, executive editor of Control Magazine and ControlGlobal.com, and this is the latest in our Control Amplified podcast series. As usual, we're talking with different experts about important topics in the process control and automation field and seeking to go beyond our print and online coverage to explore some of the underlying issues affecting users, system integrators, suppliers, and other folks and organizations in these industries. This time, I'm talking to Christopher Hudson, Operations Manager at Applied Control Engineering. This is a longtime system integrator headquartered in Newark, Delaware, but it also has multiple offices in the eastern U.S. and also in Colorado and Texas. So, Chris, thanks for speaking with us today.
Of course, happy to be here.
All right, cool. Well, let's get started. And so in a nutshell, you know, what is Applied Control Engineering? So just a little history and expertise, and what types of projects do you usually work on?
Sure. So Applied Control Engineering, or ACE, if you want to use the short form, we are an independent systems integrator. So that means we, as a controls systems integration company, our role is to help develop new control systems, retrofit existing control systems, implement greenfield, brownfield for all the different technologies. So the fact that we are independent means we're not tied to a specific distributor like Rockwell or Siemens or any of that. We have the capabilities and the ability to support all different technologies. ACE has been around. We are actually celebrating our 35th anniversary this year. Actually, it was May 1st, so we just hit 35 years. The company started as three ex-DuPonters looking to get into the controls industry back in 1991. Since then, we have grown pretty rapidly. Like you said, we have 9 offices now. We support the entire United States. We also support international customers as well. We've grown from 3 employees to over 200. In terms of what kind of customers we support, we hit all different facets of industry: oil and gas, food and bev, bulk chemical, specialty chemical, pharmaceutical. If there's an industry, we probably have been a part of it in some way, shape, or form.
Awesome. All right. As I recall, you know, we used to cover alarm issues, including nuisances and cascades, fairly often, but I don't think we've had many stories on it recently. In fact, I haven't seen much news or other coverage of alarm issues recently. So, you know, what's the state of the field at present, and what processes experience, you know, which types of alarms and why?
Sure, that's a good question. So the current state of the industry, to be real with you, really hasn't changed too much from probably the last time you talked about alarms. Alarms are a thing that's recognized. Alarms are a thing that obviously all process industries have. And just over time, alarms tend to become a little less organized, right? As systems improve, as modifications are made, as areas get decommissioned, people just don't have the bandwidth to be able to assess and understand all of the alarm changes or modifications or improvements that come along with that. So some number of years ago, I don't remember exactly the release date of it, but you know, ISA came out with an alarm standardization form, ISA 18.2. And since then, that has kind of been the golden standard for applying alarm management systems. So in terms of what processes experience, which types of alarms, I mean, realistically, that kind of boils down to the process that you're in, right? So pharmaceutical tends to be a lot more, reaction or failed batch alarms, things outside of their recipe set points and things like that. You know, process industry, bulk chemical, continuous processes are more along the lines of, detecting for potential abnormal situations. Maybe a motor has stopped working, or a valve is stuck closed, or a tank level goes high, or things like that. Things that tend to require a little, you know, a relatively immediate reaction from operators.
Cool. All right. When we used to cover alarms, the people that design and set up systems seem to err on the side of, hey, just add more alerts and alarms. And then the people on the plant floor, months or years later, would be saddled with all these, just in case kind of alarms. And so that kind of led to the cascades. So is that design, set up versus operating people conflict still, and I'm assuming it's still happening. And then, so are those kinds of resulting cascades, are those still a problem? And if so, why, and what's being done about it?
Oh, for sure. So yes, I mean that problem is going to persist until we decide we no longer need alarms and anything, right? That's just the nature of the beast when it comes to designing and maintaining process systems. You add a new valve, you go, oh, cool, I can add these couple alarms in there without ever thinking about the rationalization behind those alarms. Realistically, an alarm is something that an operator has to respond to. Right, that's just at its core what it is, right? And so if you put in an alarm that doesn't require an operator interaction with your system, you've just made a nuisance alarm, right? And over time, these alarms start to build up and build up and build up, and without a good rationalization process, you start to get into what you call these cascades, where one trigger will just start just flooding all kinds of alarms through the process, and then operators get inundated with alarms and they don't know where to start. Oftentimes, and I've seen this in practice, operators will just get tons of alarms and just go, eh, none of these really matter. And then you have to ask yourself, why do I even have these alarms, right? What are they, what is the point? If the operator just ignores them, then I'm not sure what to do there, right? So as long as we continue as processes, add these alarms, but don't think about what is the actual meaning behind this alarm? What are we supposed to do about this alarm? These cascades are always going to be an issue.
Oh man, that sounds like a rough one of those persistent problems that it's hard to wring out. You already mentioned ISA 18.2, but I was going to ask, what else might be going on with alarm standards lately? Have they made progress? If not, why not? I guess maybe start off, how recently was 18.2 put in place? Is that a couple of years
Oh,
ago or more
gosh.
than a couple of years ago?
2016.
Now, 2016 seems recent, but then when I interview people, I say the 80s were 20 years ago, and then I realize the 80s were 40 years ago.
I
And
know.
so 2016 sounds recent, but then I look at the calendar and it's like, oh man, that's 10 years. That's a de solid decade.
It sure it is. It is. But the good news is the core concepts of alarm philosophy really have not changed much. Where we're seeing a lot more change is the context and the presentation of those core alarm philosophies through the different technologies. So in our particular case, you look at like a Rockwell system, right? The way that they manage their alarms and the way that they present their alarms has become more easy to understand and easier to troubleshoot. Same with Siemens, same with or AVEVA system platform, right? They are adjusting their display systems and their alarm management systems to better reflect what is an ISA 18.2.
Yeah. Hey, just as a side question, I guess, ISA covers certain process industries, but has there been any alignment or commonality established between, different industries of their safety standards, between like oil and gas or pharma or water, wastewater? Have any of those like come to an understanding?
Well, it's a good question. I realistically, the way that every area approaches an alarm philosophy usually is about the same, right? Because when you're looking at a specific action, right, you're looking at something that an operator needs to respond to, all processes assess that alarm condition based on the same three things. What's the risk of human damage? What's the risk of equipment damage? And what's the risk of environmental damage? Right. We don't want a situation where a high level in a tank is going to cause an explosion, right? Obviously, that's the worst case scenario. But we also don't want a situation where if this alarm is not responded to, this pump breaks and it's $2.5 million to replace. You know what I mean?
Right.
So in terms of interpreting those standards, most industries are pretty aligned for understanding how to rationalize and how to apply these alarm systems. That doesn't mean they all do with consistency, right? A lot of times what you'll see is companies will do upfront alarm philosophy development, understand the alarms that are going in, but they don't follow up. A big part of ISA 18.2 is that continuous monitoring and reassessment of your alarms. Once you put the alarms in, get 6 months, get a year of data, and then see what alarms are happening, right? How long does it take operators to respond to? A lot of good systems now actually have alarm history. So you can go back and see, I know these alarms are triggering three times as many as every other alarm and things like that, right? I know that these alarms are, I get alarm flood. I think we're going to talk about those probably a little bit later, but I
Right.
get an alarm here, and then these six more alarms come out right after it. So you can get that kind of contextual information about your process.
Right. Well, and that was something I remember. I'm remembering when we covered the rationalization process is evaluating, which alarms are useful and working well, and applied to the right amount, and then you can going back also you can determine the ones that are. That really are kind of nuisances and need to be wrung out. And
Exactly.
this is, of course, a very salient topic at this point, given, just in the past few days, the events in Los Angeles and now in Washington State, with both of those tanks having severe breaches and problems that probably could have been solved by in hindsight, following some of these rules. We talked a little bit about the conflict between the designers and the operators, but so then to help them out or to help them help each other out, what are non-actionable alarms and maybe what are some of the best overall methods for reducing those?
Sure. So non-actionable alarms are realistic. We call them events, right? Which are things that an operator should be aware of, but they don't necessarily need to respond to. And that is something that you will spend the time doing part of, say, your alarm rationalization process. So part of this process, is understanding all of the alarms that you have or could have in your system and looking at each of them from like a holistic point of view. What does this alarm mean? And oftentimes what you'll find is alarms that don't really add any information to the operator, right? But they are things that they should be aware of. So, for an example, let's say we have a situation where you have two. Oh, let me say that again. I bumped my mic. So, let's say, for example, we have a situation where you have two pumps, right? A lead lag kind of pump system. And on the discharge of the pump, you have a low flow switch. In the event that one of the pumps isn't running, that flow switch is going to be an alarm, right? Just but the normal process operation of that says that shouldn't be an alarm. So we can eliminate that kind of alarm situationally as an alarm because it doesn't actually want to be an it wants to be an alarm, but it doesn't actually make sense that it's an alarm because that process isn't using it. Other non-actual alarms, these are particular, like in this particular case, another example is, and we did this, I did this at one of my customer sites where we identified transmitter failures as a non-actionable event, right? Because the operator themselves aren't going to be the people repairing or replacing these transmitters. And these are specifically just indication-only transmitters. Like a temperature probe or a pressure transmitter or something like that, that doesn't have an interlock or an action tied to it, right? Maybe it's just something that's the top of a distillation column temperature. It doesn't actually trip anything. It doesn't require an interaction. It's there for operator information. And an operator is most likely going to call instrument tech, an instrument or electrician to come do that repair. So in that case, that operator isn't actually responding to the issue. They're putting in a work order, they're calling their shop, whatever that may be. So that can be an event, something to trigger, or a very low priority alarm, something that says, hey, this is an issue. We should take care of this,
Yeah.
right?
So then, and this is again a bit of a side question, but maybe, do those lower level alerts and non-actionable alarms, can they go into some kind of repository for trending? And I hesitate to ask, but maybe AI could help. Artificial intelligence might say, "Hey, buddy, you've got a trend here of something that could be an issue down the line." I assume those, by the time I think of a good idea, there's got to be 10 people who've already, developed a product or service for it. I assume that that is in the works or coming soon, right?
So obviously AI in its current state and form can do a ton of good for analyzing your alarm databases. In a lot of these systems, you can filter out events and alarms into two different like groups, however you want to organize it. But absolutely, if you keep this alarm history and you have a good way to be able to insert it into like an AI system, it can probably run a ton of reports for you based on all the different things that ISA is identifying. There are certainly already products out there that exist to do those reports for you. ACE has implemented some of these reporting systems for customers of ours. They do exist, and a lot of times what the reporting does is help with the future auditing, right? Understanding not necessarily how to build your system, but how to maintain your system. And the AI can give you the context to execute those reports for you, basically, right? And give you the information and give you an understanding of where your problem alarms could be.
Right. Now you mentioned floods briefly, but then so the reporting and analytics may be, enhanced or made easier by AI. That can help reduce floods and chattering. And remind me what chattering is also.
Sure. Yeah, a chattering alarm is an alarm. I think ISA defines it as it comes in more than 3 times every 10 minutes.
Oh boy.
So that's like, you get that boop, boop, right? That alarm that just keeps hitting you, right? I had a customer one time. They had an alarm. It was on a controller or something like that, but it came in so many times, and you go back and look at your history. After running this alarm rationalization process for them, we were able to eliminate 50% of their alarm overhead just from this one alarm.
Oh
And
man.
they never actually, yeah. So they went from 300,000 alarms a month to 100,000 just from one alarm.
Oh
You know,
boy.
and it's crazy. A lot of sites have this kind of experience and they don't realize it because they just haven't gone through the effort. And that amount of reduction just really reduces the concern because, like we were saying before, if an operator just sees the same alarm over and over and over again, they're going to start ignoring it,
Right.
right?
Which is dangerous, right? I mean, potentially.
Absolutely, absolutely, right? We don't want any alarm to be ignored for sure.
Yeah.
But in terms of the analytics for the reporting, reducing chattering and things like that, right? What the AI is really going to do is give you the context to make those decisions. As an engineer, it's still your responsibility to interpret the data that I think AI is going to give you, right?
Right.
And so understanding, yes, I can see this is a chattering alarm. Yes, I can see what these alarm floods are. How do I respond to it? How do I want to update my alarm system? I know maybe I could do some kind of systematic suppression of my process, where if I know, and this is not alarm floods, but I forget the term they're looking for. It's like related alarms, where like if I get alarm A, I always get alarms B, C, and D.
Right.
And I can look at my process and understand, oh, look, when this pump shuts off, this low flow happens, and then I get a high level, and then I get this process, right? And you can get this like workflow of understanding, a lot of times in systems, engineers care about what the first outs are, which is the first thing to trip. And understanding what the aftermath of that first out is gives a lot of context to the process so that you can better organize your alarm system.
Is first out similar to root cause? They sound
Pretty much.
related.
Pretty much. So root cause is, obviously what is the initiating element, right? You can boil all of your alarm systems back to one root cause, maybe a high level in a tank, or like we said, the pump shut off. First out is very similar. First out is what's the first thing to go? Because a lot of times, let's look at like a compressor, right? Compressors have all these vibration sensors and temperature probes and flows and pressures, right? And when one thing goes, you typically get this cascade of trips. And an operator is not going to know what actually tripped them out. So the first out is what shows them, here's the first thing to trip.
So having a good alarm strategy or updating it or validating it, like the client you mentioned that went from 300,000 to 100,000, which still seems like a lot, but how does maybe that customer or others, how do you get there? Or help them get there. And then what is the level of relief that they experience? Because not having that headache or that, burr under your saddle has got to be extremely gratifying.
Oh
And then
yeah.
how, there's many people I'm sure that, are dealing with similar situations. How do we get them to that brave new world of, oh, this is much better and more comfortable, and wouldn't that be
Absolutely.
nice?
Yeah, so obviously the best time to start an alarm philosophy for your facility is any time. Right. Ideally, at the beginning when you're still building the process, but any time is a good time to start. What typically the first step is, if you have not gone down this path before, is to build an alarm philosophy document or a procedure that helps you and your organization understand what's important. How do you define different alarms? How do you prioritize, apply severity, reaction, whatever it may be. When you're looking at your alarm system, though, developing these reports on existing alarm systems is really what gives you the context, right? The alarm floods, chattering alarms, stale alarms, which are alarms that come in and don't leave for extended periods of time, right? If my operators are not responding to alarm systems for 2, 3 days, is that really an alarm? Suppressed alarms. If an operator is just suppressing that alarm every 8 hours and they're not responding to it, again, is that just a nuisance alarm, right? So understanding and implementing these reports to give the operators the context, or give the engineers and the operators the context, really helps them be able to reduce that overhead. And I think a really good indicator of a showing an alarm philosophy or an alarm rationalization process is the time to respond for alarms, right? Obviously, total alarm count, but you don't want to rationalize every single alarm out, then you're not going to know what's going on. But understanding what that total response time to each alarm is and seeing that go down shows that you are putting in a good alarm philosophy, at least in my mind.
So the philo you start with the ph as so is so often the case, you start with the philosophy, what do we want to do, what is our goal, and then that directs the search for the the tools or the whatever solution we might happen to need. So then and there's the ISA standards that, talk to your friendly system integrator, including ACE and others. I assume many folks are doing this. Is there any other, seminal or cornerstone resources that are good to consult, or just search online I know the ISA has got its website. I always go and try and get the standards, and they're like, send us several hundred dollars for the standard, but then there's many summaries and there's white papers and there's things like that that are available. But I don't think there's any single resource, is there?
Different companies have different softwares that they can offer to help with this management. You'll what you're really going to see, it's called a master alarm database, or an MADB. And what this does is it serves as that central repository for this alarm philosophy and rationalization process.
Right.
Different companies offer this. We've worked with a couple, and the idea is this is what the engineers are going to use to implement their alarm decisions, right? I know there's a few that even integrate directly into your Rockwell PLC or your Delta V controller or whatever
Right.
it may be to set those things. We had one where we actually created faceplates on our operator pop-ups to show them those contexts, right? You'll hear me refer to it as the four C's. I think it's cause, corrective action, consequence, and I forget the last C, but like time to respond, right?
Yeah.
terrible of me to forget the four C's.
Oh no, well, who developed the four C's? Is that it sounds like one of the organizations had, it's not ISA, is it?
No, I don't think it's an ISA. It came from one of the softwares we were using.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, that's all right. I'm sure somebody will remind us eventually here, but there's always the I always tell people that, being a reporter and editor, it's like, go out and find out what's happening. Whether it's a health concern or a corporate organizational concern or a plant floor issue, that you can always do a little investigating yourself. Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, I do have them. I know in the article on the process webpage, right, about this. I do list the four C's there.
Yeah, is that ACES webpage?
No,
Or
on the on it, so it's on Processing Magazine.
Ah, okay. All right. Our sister magazine.
Yes.
So Processing Magazine, and I forget their website, but then they just search for, like, Chris Hudson or something at that. Okay. And people can always call or email any of us. I buttonhole so many people. I figure anytime I get asked a question, go right ahead. But those resources are all out there. It just takes a little, initiative. Get up and go to make that happen. All right. Well, I think we've covered it pretty well here. This is a great interview. People should feel very encouraged that, this is not overwhelming. This is something they can do and do in a timely fashion. I didn't mention you guys' website, but I know it's ace-net.com. So that's another probably a good place to start. And man, Chris, thank you for talking to us today and helping our listeners, helping me get back into understanding alarms, and helping the readers too, who have had very diff not enough coverage lately. And so, thank you for helping us accomplish that goal.
Of course, absolutely. Like you said, right? Every alarm journey, it seems daunting, it seems overwhelming, but just taking that first step, just the
Right.
basic understanding, like get started, right? Find an alarm, find a
Yeah.
process improvement. You'll thank yourself later
Yeah.
as time goes on.
And there's a million, sayings, like, well begun is half done. The journey of 1,000 miles or leagues begins with the single step, but it's always just a
Exactly.
little bit. And personally, with, like, all the deadlines I deal with, it's like just getting a few paragraphs written. Oh man, I can do this. It can be done. So
Exactly.
awesome. All right. Well, this has been another Control Amplified podcast. I'm Jim Montague. Thanks for listening. And and please remember that Control Amplified podcasts are available on most podcasting apps, such as the iTunes Store and Google Play. And also, of course, we at Control Magazine's YouTube channel, and also at controlglobal.com. All right. Thanks very much, Chris.